Hey everybody, Aaron here with a quick message about a tribute concert going on here Tuesday, June 5th at Barboza, a new rock club here in Seattle on Capitol Hill. Tribute for Jason Molina, singer-songwriter that's responsible for the band Magnolia Electric Company, and also this song, Ohia, which I think you will enjoy.
Is dark. Every light on this side of the town.
Now Jason's run into some medical difficulties and he needs your help. Much like a lot of musicians out there, they don't have insurance. So, you know, to continue to bring good music to your ear holes, these guys could use your help from time to time. So they're holding a tribute there at Barboza, and going to be featuring bands like Pickwick, Cumulus, and Ben Fisher, all to raise money for you know, to help out with the medical expenses. So please come down to this. It's being held at Barboza again. It's $8 at the door here in beautiful Seattle, Washington. So come and do that. $8. Come on, to help somebody out with their life. Not much of expense to continue hearing music like this. This is Ohia by Magnolia Electric Company.
In the sirens and the silences now, all the great set up hearts.
Hope you enjoy it, guys. Let's get started with the show. Hello and welcome, everyone.
Oh, hey.
Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 100.
Red Eagle.
In what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series, everyone.
Oh, mother of God.
Oh, man. I am your host, Aaron Roden.
I want to eat pizza.
And this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. And boy, oh boy, do we have a payload of awesome to drop on you today. Singer-songwriter Brian John Appleby, local Seattle guy.
Hail to the king, baby.
Coming in to Dining Room Studios. He's going to talk about religion, going to talk about music, going to talk about how he got started, and going to talk about something that we've kind of tried to broach before. The subject has been broached, people, but never really discussed. But Brian was a transplant from California, and they moved up here as a band. His older band moved up here to Seattle with the thought that they were gonna, you know, strike it big and everything like that. So it's a great story, and it's a great discussion with a fantastic musician, somebody that I have been a big fan of for a little while here in Seattle, Brian John Appleby. Great stuff. Really excited to talk to this guy, or I was, because it already happened. We just recorded it. He just left Dining Room Studios, so we'll be talking with him in a moment. But yes, if you've noticed, I did say at the beginning of this, episode 100. 100. Can you believe it? I can't. Like I've said many times on this show, I didn't think we were going to make it past episode 20. It's a lot of work, people. It's a lot of work putting this thing together, and it's definitely a labor of love. And I got to thank all of you that are listening to this right now for downloading the show or streaming it from Stitcher or our website at air-raid.net, and downloading it from Zune Marketplace, iTunes, all those different places. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for giving us your love, really. Or giving us your time and letting me chat in your ears for an hour. and bring these musicians and comedians and whoever else comes on this show your way. Because we, you know, we would not continue doing this if it was not for you, the person that is listening to this right now. It's been somewhat of a crazy ride, if I can be a little bit cliche for a moment here. It's been a lot of fun. I've had a lot of fun doing this show, and we really appreciate it. From the bottom of our hearts here at the Air Raid Podcast, we appreciate the hell out of you guys listening to this show, because it is awesome. You guys are awesome. The show's mediocre, but you guys are fantastic. So thank you, thank you, thank you so much. And we've got a trove of new Apple. What Apple? Well, it is Apple, but whatever. Yeah, we've got a trove of new iTunes reviews to read for you. Some of which one is from the UK, one is from Canada, and a bunch here from the US. Now, one thing I did not realize is that if you go onto iTunes, if you scroll all the way down to the bottom of your iTunes page, you can change the nationality of the page that you're looking at. So there's all these, you know, every country in the world is on here. So what I just realized today as I was flipping through this is that there are reviews from other countries that I had no idea existed. Let's read this one. This one from Canada, real quick. It's a real short one. It says, "Great podcast, 5 stars from Monishikwa. Left here on February 9th, 2012. Entertaining and interesting. Thank you very much." We really, really, really appreciate that. Let's talk about this for a second, shall we? Can we just talk about this? Now, this is not your problem, okay? This is not your problem. This is mine. But if you're gonna leave a review for us on iTunes and you are from a different country other than the US, please let us know about it. Shoot me an email, aaron@air-raid.net, because I love reading these things. Of course, you know, it inflates my ego. My ego is already just booming right now because of all these new reviews and us being featured on the front page of iTunes and making it onto the top charts. Like today, we were at 65, number 65 in all the land. That's pretty amazing, right? Totally amazing. But if you're going to leave a review and you're not from the country of the United States, please shoot me an email, aaron@air-raid.net, and let me know that you did it so I know where to find it, because there's a lot of countries on this planet, and it takes some time to look for. So anyway, with that said, let's look at the UK. This one from Andrew Goodall, left just a couple days ago. A show which is in my must downloads, fast approaching 100 shows, which we are now as we speak, and still I eagerly await each one. I've been drinking a little bit, Andrew, so sorry about that, but thank you so much for the great review, 5-star review there. And of course we've got these from the US. Oh boy. Yeah, a lot of plugs in this episode 100. This one from Ed Wallach, Seattle Sounds, 5 stars. "Great show out of Seattle with really good sound and a consistent lineup of guests. Nicely done and a fun listen. Great way to pass my time hiking when I'm tired of my playlist. Looking forward to going back through them all, Aaron. Subscribe now before they run out of podcasts." Not going to run out, dude. Not gonna run out. This one from super duper listener Alan Smithy Jr., also known as Scott in Atlanta. "Aaron is a great guy with a great show. He books some impressive guests, but is good on his own. It's my third favorite Seattle podcast." You know what? That's a little bit of an inside joke. We email back and forth together sometimes. He's a great dude. Scott in Atlanta, thank you so much for the 5-star review. And this one from Bob Vandelay, which is yet another. This is, I think this is number 2 of the the Seinfeld references on the iTunes reviews. So I always really appreciate those. Bob Vandelay says, your ears will thank you. 5 stars. Every episode brings new guests and interesting opinions, funny and entertaining. Thank you so much, everybody. And I know this is a lot. I know it's a lot to, I get some emails sometimes saying that I do too much of this. Hey man, it's my show. How's your podcast doing? Should I insert some crickets right there? Maybe I should. Yeah. That'd be good podcastery, right? Wouldn't it? Okay. But thank you guys so much. It's been a real pleasure doing this show, and I enjoy the hell of it, and we're going to keep on going. We're going to keep on going from here. So here we go. Let's get to this interview with Brian John Appleby, and we're going to go with the song. Let's see here. Should we check this? Here it is. The Rider, the Horse, the Land, off of his current album, Fire on the Vine. Go and check this out, brianjohnappleby.com. You can get the music there. You can get it at their Bandcamp site. So definitely check that out. One of my favorite musicians here in the land of Seattle. So this is The Rider, the Horse, the Land. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears, episode 100, everybody. And I also said, I did state last week that we would be doing our episode with Moshe Kasher. However, that is a fairly short interview. This is a nice long one that ranges a whole bunch of topics. So I thought this one was more applicable to the episode 100. Rider of the Horse, the Land, Brian John Appleby. We'll be right back. About the rider, the horse, and the land. You sang over me with a tambourine in your hand. About the rider, the horse, and the land. All right, welcome back. Episode 100. Can you believe it? Joining me here in Dining Room Studios on this beautiful Saturday, in the midst of a really shitty weather week here in the land of Seattle, Brian John Appleby.
Hello.
Welcome, sir. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's a pleasure to finally get you on. It was like pulling teeth to get you here.
Is that accurate? I don't remember.
I always like to make people feel very uncomfortable right when we start recording.
I'm leaving. That's the episode, folks.
Yep. Episode 100, 10 minutes long. Well, welcome, sir. That was The Rider, the Horse, the Land off of your current album, Fire on the Vine, that you can find at brianjohnappleby.com. and in stores here in Seattle. Is it kind of national
too? It's just in town.
Okay, okay. Yeah. But yeah, if you live outside of Seattle, you can get that. Go to the website, definitely. And go like them on Facebook. Do all that good stuff. Okay, so now that we got the plugs out of the way, how are you doing?
Great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Excited to be here?
I am.
Yeah? Excellent. Excellent. I'm excited to have you. So how long have you guys been a band? Because we had your guitar player, Kyle Zantos, on a little while back. And he does a lot of stuff around town.
Mm-hmm.
When did you guys first kind of form up and create this thing?
I started putting the band together about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years. And, at that point it was pre this album being out, and we were sort of trying to reinterpret the EP, and I sort of hoped I could be a rock star, but quickly realized that my voice doesn't work that way. So we tried to push these songs in this really crazy direction, and it didn't work at all. But anyways,
were you trying to like make it more like loud and
it was sort of like your classic, like, you know, there's an electric guitar player drummer and a bassist, and then me. I was still playing acoustic guitar, but we were trying to make it really raucous, and I was trying to yell and scream and stuff, and it was like, no,
not working out.
They're not made that way. So anyway, it has evolved since. There's still the drummer and the bassist, Joe and Cole, are the only two that are still around from that time. And mm-hmm. then
and when was it? When was that?
That was like 2 years ago.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But we were sort of just like learning each other's playing styles and just exploring a little bit. So
right. Now I wanted to ask you about that, because we were just at Sasquatch, and I asked the band Here We Go Magic how long it took them to kind of, when they first formed as a band, because it was all started by this guy Luke. Mm-hmm. Right, he was the front man.
Yeah.
And when he started putting this band together, how long it took for them to kind of coalesce and like work as one unit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and be comfortable enough with each other where they're trying different things during band practice and stuff. Was it kind of an immediate thing for you guys?
No, I mean, it takes me a long time to feel comfortable with other people's artistic visions. And just now, after this long, am I finally sort of like, you know, we just practiced a new song that wasn't ever recorded for the first time like a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, the process has always been, I write the songs, I work with Kevin Matley, who's a producer. We make we made the EP together. We also made the full length together, and the whole thing was like, I bring the demo to him, we flush it out with ideas, we bring in musicians to fill in the parts, and then the record's done, we release it, and then after all that, we bring it to the band. And so they're sort of, they've always learned the parts that were already sort of written with very minimal input. And they've done a good job of adapting, because, you know, on the record there will be a song with, you know, 13 instruments, and there's only five of us. So they've been really, really good about adapting, but that's been their role. And so now this is the first time where I'm sort of like, this is a new song. I don't have all the lyrics done. It's not recorded yet. I haven't, you know, hooked up with Kevin to figure out what we want to do in the long run. And yet, okay, let's try it. And it's been really fun. And that's new for me. And
yeah.
Still.
Was it kind of a hurdle for you to get over? Like, you know, maybe emotionally is not the right word, but
just artistically
mentally.
And I mean, it's going a lot better than, I don't know. I guess that's sort of what it comes down to, is like, after 2 years now, we're finally sort of, I sort of feel like I can trust them.
Mm-hmm.
We've all lived in the same house together for a while now. And so they have been listening to all the stuff I've been listening to and hearing the songwriters I love, and just see the way I am and what I like and what I want. And so it wasn't like a hurdle, like I had to push myself, but it is a new sort of territory that feels natural to approach.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what you, that's like kind of the ultimate goal too, right?
Right, yeah.
Is like get it to where it feels good.
Because
mm-hmm. This is one thing that always kind of, when I was playing, playing in my band and in bands in the past and stuff, like, you know, you come to the table with a song and you have it in your head that it's going to sound a certain way,
mm-hmm.
right? And then it, you know, with other people's input, it doesn't necessarily turn out that way.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's always kind of a tough thing to deal with too, because each one of these songs that you've written are kind of like your children almost. Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's gotta be kind of a tough thing, but
yeah,
I mean, you're saying that you had on the first album, you had these things already written and stuff, mm-hmm. but is it like when you guys play live shows, is it more improvisational? Do you guys kind of, you know, to use a,
No, I'm pretty, I mean, not that I'm,
you guys kind of stick within the form of the song.
Yeah. I mean, we very carefully make changes. So mm-hmm. It does sound different than the record in a lot of ways when we play these songs live, but it's not like, all right, everyone pick up an instrument and let's just like see what happens with this song. Like we're going through every measure and like tweaking and tweaking.
Right,
it's a
right.
very arduous process.
It's not like
process.
There's like some jam section of
yeah,
the song or something where somebody takes an extended solo.
Yeah, there's no, I sort of envy that. It sounds really fun, and I've, two of my members, Kyle and Jesse, both play with Damian Gerardo, and he's really great about that. Like, all right, let's just try some stuff and see what happens. And you guys are good, and I know you're good, and that's why you're playing with me. So
right on.
And yeah, so there's, you know, he's able to have it be a lot more organic, and it, you know, it's what you've just said. Like it's still uncomfortable for me to just release that control.
Yeah.
And
do you think you're getting closer to that point though? Like
I am getting closer
with the newer stuff, or
I'm getting closer to that, but I still don't think the process will change on a like inherent level. I think I don't mind that I'm careful with all the nuances of the song, and I think I'll never change with that aspect, but I will let people, hopefully the contributions of people towards those nuances is sort of what I'm working on being comfortable with.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Well, and the longer you know these guys and the longer you play with them too, like, I mean, it's just going to get easier and easier.
Yeah.
Really.
That's great.
You know?
Yeah.
So how did we were talking a little bit before we jumped in here on mic, and you said you moved up here from Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
How long were you born and raised down in California?
No, I was born in Yakult, Washington, and I have
Yakult?
Like, yeah. Yakult.
Where the hell is that?
That's like, Southwest Washington. It's like
really near the Columbia River, or
yeah, kind of.
Okay.
I don't really know, actually. I mean, I have like 2.5 memories, and then we
really?
Moved. You know, it's like very intangible flashes of memory. And
it's got to be a real small place.
It is really.
I don't
small.
Think I've ever even heard of it.
Yeah, it's. I want to say it's maybe half an hour northwest of Vancouver.
Okay,
it's like
okay.
really far down there. But I've never been back since. I don't know. So yeah, I was born there. We moved really early down to Atascadero, California, which is like San Luis Obispo area.
Right, right. Yeah. That's a beautiful area.
Yeah. And so my family moved a ton of times just, you know, around Central California. And then I moved mm-hmm. back up here.
Were your parents musical? What was the... Why did they move? Why did they pick up and move? Being musical and picking up and moving has nothing to do with each other. I don't know why I just associated
it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, they were. They wanted to be pastors, but couldn't find a church that they. I guess at the you know in the 80s, their idea of sort of what a how a church should be run was a little bit more progressive, and so they.
Uh-huh.
We're going that route and wanted to do that, but we're having a hard time finding a church that wasn't, you know, wasn't that way.
Right, right.
Wasn't the way of the more traditional sort of setup of like a senior pastor and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, they moved a lot because of that. And,
So they would find a church and then decide that it wasn't for them and then move to the
or the church would decide for them that it wasn't, you know,
really
different you know scenarios here and there.
Wow.
Anyway, they're not musical. My mom sang in church choirs and stuff, but other than that, sort of me and my brother were sort of first generation musicians.
Really.
I started, my mom would sort of hammer us over and over, if you're going to play music, you got to start with piano. You got to get piano lessons. And I wish I had done that now.
Right, you were telling me, girlfriend just bought a piano and have it in your apartment.
Yeah, so now I wish I had that background, but it was not exciting at age 12. And instead, there's a garage sale next door and a drum set was for sale, and my parents went ahead and bought it for me and got a guitar for my brother, and so that's how we got into music.
Did you guys switch?
No, I played drums from age 12 to age 23. I moved up to Seattle as a drummer in a band.
Really?
Yeah.
What band?
It was called Caravelle. I'd be surprised if you heard it. We were a band up here for about a year. It was fun. I mean, it was sort of a gateway drug of, yeah, before that I was playing in punk bands and rock bands and that sort of thing. And this was the first sort of, it was like piano driven indie rock, and we always like to say that, like, if we had only recorded a record, we would have been huge, but we never got the chance. You know,
that's what I always tell myself as well.
Yeah.
If we would have just focused on the recording, that the one recording that we did in my band,
yeah,
we would just be, we'd be the biggest band in the world.
Exactly. And you can always say that because one can argue. There's no evidence otherwise.
Right.
So, anyway,
we would have spent more time on the vocals. It would have been a fantastic, fantastic record.
Yeah. Yeah. So I
a drummer, man, that is the instrument that I have always wanted to know how to play well, but never been able to.
Yeah. It's in a city, it's hard to find space to do that in the first place.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
So I lived in a very rural area, and so it wasn't a big deal.
Well, and it's a hard instrument to learn too, because you're basically using your whole body. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you know, you've got to get to that point where, like, your limbs can move, each one can move on their own.
Right. It's the patting, like, the head rubbing. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. And that was the hardest thing, because, like, before, I was in a band once where I was playing, it was a two piece, and we would switch off. Like, I would play I would play drums, and the other guy would play bass, and then we would switch off, and I would play guitar, and the other guy would play drums, and it was just so hard. Like, I was like a little bit worse than Meg White. You know, I played one beat really well.
Yeah.
But that was it.
<That's awesome.
laughs> You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's it. That's the instrument that I'm going to try to get my daughter to play. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
If she needs a drum teacher, I give lessons.
All right, buddy. I've been looking for this. This is perfect. We're going to be great friends. So you said that your parents were pretty religious. You were obviously raised in a religious household then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And are you still practicing?
No,
Was it Christian?
Yeah, Christianity. Yeah, and my mom is Pentecostal and my dad is Baptist, and so I had a very.
Is that like a big difference? I don't know much about religion.
Yeah, sure. No,
so,
that's fine. Pentecostal is the more zealous sort of like slain in the spirit, speaking in tongues, like
that kind of stuff.
Like, and then my dad, and then Baptist
revivals
is more,
kind of
right
kind of
yeah exactly
okay
and so
okay.
I went to summer camps like that, and then
really?
But my dad is more, you know, Baptists tend to be more conservative in their theology, and their big focus my experience is that it was more of a scholarly based faith, where they're really picking apart, you know,
philosophically picking apart the Bible.
And I'm sure there's other nuances that I wasn't aware of and that someone could talk about better than me. But that was sort of two sides of a spectrum. And, you know, the one is a more thoughtful approach, and The other is the more emotional approach.
Right, and right, yeah.
And growing up, I would swing within those two.
So were your parents parts of separate churches then? Or,
no.
I mean, were they... They were just raised that way.
Yeah, they just sort of landed on on little issues. They landed on different sides of it.
Okay.
And so, but we all, you know, our family all went to the same church and stuff. And you know, depending on the church, my dad would sort of be like, "Oh my God, this theology is awful," or my mom would be like, I just want to sing, or you know, whatever. Like, so,
are they still practicing? Mm-hmm. They still. Now, is your dad a pastor?
No. That was sort of his early route. And,
okay.
No, he's not up to that anymore.
Yeah. So what made you kind of steer away from that, and when did that happen?
It wasn't. A lot of people have the experience, I mean, you hear typically when people stray from the church, it's because of bad experiences with the church itself as organization.
Yeah.
And I actually, I mean, I don't know, it's not hard to find a lot of messed up sort of shit going on in the church, and I see that and recognize it, but my personal experience was actually not, I wasn't driven away because of any bad experience. You know, like a pastor didn't touch me or something, you know, it was just, mm-hmm. I actually had a very sort of, I don't know. There was a very compassionate community that was around me when I was growing up. It actually, the reason I departed and have sort of disassociated has been theological based. So more of like, there's too many, unreconcilables, I guess, is a sort of made up word.
Okay.
I'm gonna use,
yeah.
About the character that is God, that the Judeo-Christian Bible has, you know, sort of profiled, like this entity,
right.
This character. And just, you know, yeah. So it sort of stemmed from that, and you know, looking at the world and looking at what this person is supposed to be, and just not, being able to fit the pieces together anymore. So that was how, and the record all deals with that a lot. I mean,
well, yeah. And that's what I was going to ask you too, is like the music that's on Fire on the Vine. Like, I mean, just in the song titles too, The Rider, The Horse, The Land, the one that we heard before we came on. You know, I mean, that obviously has something to do with religion, right? Mm-hmm. If you know a little bit about,
yeah, that
the
one
Christian
actually
faith,
that one actually is just,
oh really,
that's like one of the few that isn't actually.
I just see the lamb and the rider and the horse, and I'm just like, okay, there's got to be some Christianity.
It's a, yeah, it's land
in there.
It's land.
Oh, the land.
Yeah.
Ah, shit.
That I get it. I've had several people do that.
Okay. So I'm not the only idiot.
Yeah, you're just one of them. No,
just one of them. Yeah. Oh my God, that's terrible.
I don't care.
Let's change the subject. So, I mean, do you still kind of like believe in a higher power then, or is it,
because
it sounds like you had a pretty, the way that you've, described it, it sounds like you had a pretty kind of gradual, change into leaving the faith.
Yeah. I would consider myself agnostic at this point.
Okay. Yeah.
I'd really love that, like, as far as I can get right now is that I recognize that I can't know everything and that there is mystery that exists, but I am very, very hesitant to name that mystery.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah. Yeah, totally. That makes sense. And I think a lot of people are like that too. Even people that grew up non-religious, like I would consider myself agnostic, I think,
mm-hmm.
you know, to a certain, well, I mean, to a certain extent, if that makes any sense. You know, I always kind of sway back and forth. And I've told this story many, many times on this show. Like when I was growing up, my dad on Sundays would turn on the TV to like Jimmy Swaggart. Right. And he was avid about telling me that this kind of rhetoric is lies. It's all lies. Like from when I was like 5 years old, he was like very, cause he was, he got involved in a cult.
It's like a different type of evangelizing, but
from the complete other side. From the complete opposite side of the spectrum. Yeah. And like, and he, he's still very much like that. And I think it's partly because he became part of a cult when he was in his early 20s, and he's never really told me the full story on it, but, it sounded like it was pretty intense, you know, and he had to leave that,
right?
He had to leave that, you
he
know.
He swung in the
right. So now he's very like he's very opposite that, and like I find that there are a lot of people that grow up in a very when the household is more strict, right, or the religion that they become a part of is more strict, they totally swing to the opposite end of the spectrum. If you have kind of a grounded parents, like it sounds like your parents were.
Yeah, they're pretty balanced as far as their approach to people, and they're very compassionate, and I find a lot of value in the way they approach the world. It's just sort of the technical side of things that I don't quite line up with them at this point.
So, Well, that's a good place to take our first or second musical break. What should we listen to?
What about, let's just do Words of the Revelator. That seems appropriate.
Is that religious?
It.
I don't want to make any assumptions anymore. Like I just don't want
that one. That one deals with
because it sounds like.
Yeah, that one's a little more clear cut.
Okay. This is Words of the Revelator. This is off Fire on the Vine by Brian John Appleby. And we'll be back, kind of switching gears a little bit, getting away from the religious conversation back into the music conversation when we return on this 100th episode of the Air Raid Podcast.
You!
Yeah, baby. How's that feel?
So good.
So good. So it feels so good. So good. All right. We'll be back in just a moment. Enjoy.
I've known your way, but I'm the gale that'll rattle your gate. You shudder, I make you shake. You will find what you did not see. A road less narrow, a way not steep. And oh my child, don't you lose your remember my table, remember my face, and the things I told you in the middle of the night.
Can't differentiate between an ND and an MB.
Yeah.
See, they're very similar. They're very similar, yeah. All right, we are back with, joined here in Dining Room Studios with singer-songwriter Brian John Appleby. Now, Brian John Appleby, that's like one of the best names ever.
Thank you.
Like, that's right up there with Shelby Earle.
Thank you.
Right?
I hope so. Yes, it is. It's really an incredible name. Thank you.
It is. It is. It is. You should be very proud of that. Your parents should be very proud.
My parents,
of that.
Yeah. They did it. They did it.
Were you named after anybody?
Not that I know of. If I was going to be a girl, my name would be Crystal Dawn Appleby, though. I know that much.
Crystal Dawn. See, that's still a really good one. I think it's the last name. It's the last name Appleby that kind of just rounds everything out.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah.
So, anyway, I don't know why I brought that up.
I think I did. That's why. Yeah. Well, welcome back. So before we left, we were talking a bit about religion and where you kind of came from, and even before that, we were talking about how you started playing music. Your parents bought you a drum set mm-hmm. at a yard sale, and then you moved up here to Seattle. How long ago?
Five and a half years. Yeah.
Ago so. From California, from Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to school down there? Or?
I went to community college.
Okay.
You know, it was like 1.5 semesters that took me 4.5 years or something like that. I was working also.
You're not alone, my friend.
Yeah.
You're not alone. Yeah. And then moved up here to Seattle. What was the reason to move to Seattle?
It was just for music.
For music.
Yeah.
Okay. Because of the scene? I mean, what?
It was sort of the romanticizing of what we imagined the scene to be. We sort of like... You know, from our Santa Cruz is a small town, and it's musically, it's like if you're in a reggae band or a punk band, you can sort of do okay and like play consistent shows. But otherwise, like, you might as well just, you know, move somewhere if you really want to do this. So we thought about San Francisco, but then it was like, it's like an hour away.
It's not too far. It's not far enough.
Yeah. Then it was L.A. or Austin or here. And I had been on a road trip up through here and was pretty enamored by the landscape and the idea of the wild north, you know. And so we sort of came
Plus,
to
you
that.
Can grow just an amazing beard.
So it's true. Why not? Yeah, that was
why not
that
move
was
to
the biggest,
Northwest?
Yeah, every other factor was... came with
paled
that,
in but, comparison
yeah, bowed down to that one.
Oh, that's great. So yeah, I've always wondered this too, like, because we've had a lot of musicians on this show that that are transplants
mm-hmm.
and that is one question that keeps on or one subject that keeps on coming up is like, you know, the scene in Seattle is what drew us here. So what did you think the scene was like, I guess, first of all?
I guess we didn't really know. We just knew that sort of like there's some labels up here that we like. And when I would think about Seattle, it was sort of like, you know, it was more like the Northwest region, like anything between Vancouver, BC and like Portland, Oregon. Like that's, it's, you know, when you're not really living there and don't really get it, you just see it as this zone. Like if we get in that zone, we can sort of,
right.
Is
it a residual thing from the 90s? Is that what it is?
I mean, and there, you know, we were at that time, like what, 6 years ago when we were thinking about this or six and a half years ago, we were all pretty into Death Cab and Modest Mouse and some of those bands that, you know, the 4 years prior we had seen like doing some really cool stuff. And, there's just some like mainstream indie that was coming out of here that sort of was game changing. And, naively, we sort of thought that, we go up there, play shows, you know, twice a month, which is, you know, 100 times more than we're playing in this town. And,
In Santa Cruz.
In Santa Cruz, yeah. I mean, we'd play, like, church coffee shops down there and that sort of thing. And so, and it's just, historically is a music town, and we wanted to move to a music town. And
So what were your first impressions then once you got up here? What was kind of the first impressions of the scene then?
I don't know that we really... ever got acquainted with a scene. We sort of would book, you know, we were playing shows, but it was at sort of weird places, and you know, we never really connected to any
Cafe
sort of,
Q.
Yeah, we played there a couple times. We played, like, you know, Skylark, which isn't a bad venue, but it's sort of like in the middle.
Right. Mars Bar. That's where we're like, that's Googling where venues. Starts out. Yeah.
Googling venues in Seattle and like, let's try there. And we weren't connected at all. And it was sort of like
these venues, too, for people who don't live in Seattle, like the Mars Bar, Q Cafe, and what was it? The Skylark.
Yeah.
Like, these are all like, they're great places to play. They're great rooms when people show up because they're so far kind of away from everything else, and they're in weird locations and stuff. But that's kind of where like you start here in the city of Seattle. Yeah.
But it's like if you're no one, no one's going to come, and then it's you and the sound guy and the bartender. So, we were pretty isolated. We lived in South Beacon Hill, and we had a basement, and we practiced, and it was fun, and we were being creative and exploring and stuff.
Get that mic just a little bit closer to your face there. Sorry. You can extend that, too. You can lean back and just pull that whole arm. There you go, buddy.
Got it.
See?
Technology.
Comfy.
So anyway, we were learning a lot, and we were sort of didn't really know what we were doing.
Yeah.
And
was it a little bit of a letdown? Were you guys like, oh shit.
Yeah.
When you first got up here and started trying to get shows and stuff? Or?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know anything at all. So it was sort of like, the guitarist, Kevin actually was playing, Kevin Matley, the guy who is producing my stuff these days. He was the guitarist of that band. He also moved from Santa Cruz, and there's a couple other fellas from down there. And the singer, Ben, and Kevin sort of were the only ones who had been in bands that had played shows with any regularity. So they were sort of like hitting all these walls, booking stuff. And I was sort of just like twiddling my thumbs, like hoping that like Sub Pop would just sign us or something.
Yeah.
You know, like these
ridiculous. Yeah, yeah.
And we would send our demos out to these, you know, we just didn't know. So we didn't really get plugged into a community. All that to say, we didn't find a scene. We didn't know anyone in the scene. We like met a few bands. In that time, the only band that we sort of met that I've remained friends with was Hey Marseille, and we played.
I just talked to them last weekend.
Yeah, they were sort of like where we were, except they're from up here and they had a little more traction. And we played like three or four shows with them and became buddies with them. And so it's been good to sort of, you know. We had like, they were the alternate ending to what Caravelle was. They sort of like actually kept going and were successful, and we just, you know,
did the sound off competition, didn't they?
I don't know.
At EMP or something like that. That sounds familiar to me. I don't know. Excuse me. If I had a burp button or a cough button, that would be great. That's going to be the next addition to the dining room studios. The sound off competition is like it's put on by EMP, which is the Experience Music Project. I think most people know, if you've ever been to Seattle or ever seen pictures of Seattle, there's that building that looks like a melted guitar. and it's kind of like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for Seattle. Almost, you know, but it has memorabilia from, you know, all sorts of bands. But they put on this like battle of the bands for like younger, like under 21 people, right? Have you heard of this?
I've never heard of this.
You've never heard of this?
I guess I just moved
I
here.
Think I, and maybe I'm remembering wrong, but I think Hey Marseille was part of that, and they won the sound off competition one year. And you get like this big, you get like basically like studio time.
Oh, cool.
For the prize. So don't hold me to that. That's all hearsay, but I think Hey Marseille was part of that. I don't know where I was going with that. Where was I? I was just trying to sound smart and make it sound like I knew stuff.
I thought that, and now you said this, and now I'm doubting that. So
this is part of my problem. I always second guess.
Sold yourself out.
So just should just go with it, right? So you made friends with that band, and that was when you were still in Caravelle,
right?
Right. That was so. When did that kind of disband?
Yeah, Caravelle lasted a year, and then we quit, and then I sort of decided I'm going to go back to school. But as anyone sort of knows, that you don't just decide that and then walk into a classroom. It takes a couple years to, especially when you have no idea how to navigate through the education system, and it's really daunting. So from the time I decided that and the time I was actually going back, it was like 2.5-3 years. So in the meantime, I got a little job at a restaurant, and I still like playing music, but it was at that point that I was sort of like, drums are inherently collaborative, and I have never really been able to...
Yeah, you can't just write a whole song just...
Yeah, and I was curious about that, and I knew, and I've never liked team sports. I've never liked group assignments in high school. I sort of know this about myself, that I like working in isolation and sort of producing something that is 100% my own and my own, my own voice and personality and la la la. And so, I knew guitar enough and been around it enough to know some chords and try some stuff out and learn a couple finger picking patterns from Iron and Wine covers and see where it goes. And so, after a year of that, I had a little batch of songs. And so Kevin and I, who I was living with, and a few other guys in this house, he helped me record it in the basement, just really simple.
So wait, you really didn't know how to play guitar. You were a drummer.
Right. Yeah.
And you just kind of picked up this instrument, and you knew a couple of things, like
I knew,
like, throughout the years you were just kind of strumming on one, or you'd pick one up occasionally.
My brother had one around. I think it wasn't until I was like 18 that I actually learned like the three chords it takes to play any worship song so that I could play at summer camp,
G, C, and E, or
something. Yeah. So it's like, it's some, there's... By the time Caraval broke up, I knew how to play a handful of chords and could sort of I felt okay exploring that instrument, even though I still didn't really know anything about it.
Yeah.
So that's what I sort of did. And it wasn't like, oh, here's this thing. What's it called? A guitar. I'm going to pick it up. Oh my God, I'm amazing. I was sort of chipping away here and there. Mm-hmm. And then, and just learn some cover songs, and that's, I still stand by that as a way to learn an instrument.
Oh yeah.
I think it's amazing.
Yeah, and totally.
I'm doing that right now, actually. I've been playing a lot of covers at shows because I can't write a song. So
what are you playing?
I've been playing this Gillian Welsh cover, Everything Is Free. I've been playing a couple Leonard Cohen covers. I always come back to Paul Simon. He's sort of my guy.
Yeah.
So a couple of his, and played a Patsy Cline cover at a show a couple of months ago.
So, nice. Yeah, I was always really afraid to learn covers. I don't know what it was. Like, maybe it was a little bit of ADD where I just would stop paying attention and start working on my own stuff. But I think more of it was just me being afraid that I wasn't going to play it right.
Yeah.
Like, did that ever factor into what you did?
No. I mean, I sort of knew that they would always, you approach it.
I guess you give it your own style too, right?
Yeah. That's I like to learn it as closely as I can, but yeah, I mean, that's sort of it, is like, these songs are going through, your own filter. Like, you really are a different person that sort of thinks about it and plays it different without even knowing you're thinking about it differently. And so, yeah, I guess that was sort of the great part, is that I couldn't play it the same as these people, but like, all of a sudden, like, I'm playing something else that's not their song and it's not anyone's song. Let's actually take that little thing and turn it into my own song, Oh, I fucked up this chord. Like, oh, but I actually like that chord better. Like, I'm going to use that. And, so you sort of collect and then put it through your filter. And that's kind of how I learned to do it. And I'm still doing it that way. Like, taking all these influences and sifting them and learning their stuff and then reinterpreting it and putting my own voice on it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Excellent. And when did you start kind of singing too? I mean, you said before, like in Caravel, you were like screaming.
Oh no!
Or yelling?
No,
or
Caravel,
was that something else?
Caravel was super
you were just
mellow.
Playing.
When I was,
oh,
when
I totally meant, oh God,
no, that's fine. It wasn't like I was ever playing hardcore. I was just trying to go in the rock direction with my own stuff a couple years ago.
And I'm going to take that whole part out.
Okay. That's fine. Dude, get your shit straight.
Have you heard the Phil, I always reference this one. Have you heard the Phil Eck episode?
No.
Terrible. Terrible. Went to his Wikipedia page. There was so much stuff that was wrong on his Wikipedia page, and I was just like quoting from those. And he was like, no, didn't do that one. Didn't.
That's awesome.
I didn't work on that one.
blew it.
Yeah. So now everything's cheap. Everything's cake, man. Everything's cake after that one.
Yeah.
So Caravel was more mellow. I'm sorry. I totally.
No, that's fine.
I totally thought that was like the more when you were trying to make more rockin'
no,
stuff.
No, yeah,
something.
that was more mellow. I started singing sort of as long as we've been going to church because you sort of just are out there and there's like 14 songs and you just want to go to McDonald's, so not that I wasn't compelled at times.
Let's just get this over with kind
but
of thing.
It's like, you know, you're standing and you want to sit, and then you're sitting and you want to stand, and here's another song, and I've heard this one 14,000 times. So me and my brother, that's sort of how we got in. I mean, that was a good practice for us because we would then like find the third, find the fifth, like try these harmonies just because it's entertaining and it's fun. And keeps us interested, and
so you know a little bit of music theory then.
Well, and then after that, that's like my high school and junior high experience, and then at that community college in Santa Cruz, I did like 4 years. I went to school for music for a while.
So. Oh, you did? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay, awesome.
And that there was a lot of singing and theory and that
sort
of stuff. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, very cool, man. And you guys are working on before we close things out here, because we're running up against the clock. Mm-hmm. And for podcasting, that's a fake clock because it's fake, because it's totally fake radio. But you know, we gotta keep ourselves in the confines of fake radio. Yeah. You are now part of the scene. Here in Seattle. Do you feel like that?
I do, yeah. I sometimes.
And when did that happen? Sorry to cut you off.
No, that's fine. It's I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't know. I it was sometime around, you know, 6 months before the Fire on the Vine was released. Mm-hmm. It really sort of started. I mean, there's a few people I had met, just, you know, like I said, Hey Marseille.
Right, right.
And Shenandoah Davis and
two big names here in Seattle.
Yeah. And I had met Damian Girado just through a mutual friend and hung out with him, you know, played a couple shows with him. So there was a few folks in town that I was sort of connected to, but it was more of just like, you know, it wasn't like I didn't feel like I was part of a broader scene at that point. It was just like these awesome people that play music that I've had a chance to meet. And then you've probably heard about this place, the fabled Connor Byrne. But that really, really was
down in Ballard.
It was pretty pivotal for meeting some folks that weren't yet established that were doing some really cool stuff. And it was a sort of. There was this hammering process that went on down there where, you know, all this stuff that you sort of weren't sure about that might have just gone the way of the buffalo, you were able to try in front of these people, and they were trying, and that's where I met the boys from the Head and the Heart, and they were really encouraging, and I guess a lot of it is just I've been up here 5 years now and been playing music, and you just start to meet more folks that are doing what you're doing.
Right,
it's
right.
not a big, you know, there's
yeah,
not
if
a big
you're trying
mystery.
If you're trying to make it a thing too, like a real thing, then you're inevitably you're going to start to chip away at that kind of stuff, and you're going to make these connections. But was there a point where it was like you finally sat back and you were like, you know, this is finally starting to become what I wanted it to be?
I think there's been a few little moments where it was like, oh my God, like, I can't believe this show is sold out, you know? And
right,
and,
right.
Or like, I can't believe that this DJ from KEXP would like give me the time of day and like actually be really stoked on what I'm doing. And
mm-hmm.
so, yeah, there's been some really affirming moments like that in the last 2 years. And
does that keep you going? Or do you think you would just
no,
keep going in regardless?
I've actually been thinking about this a lot in the last week of like, what's the, you know, you get attention, you get these people like, you know, fans or whoever that are, you know, really, really giving you these really wonderful compliments. And I've almost, and it's like amazing that they would even listen to my stuff and like form these opinions. And then on top of all that, like, email me or say something at a show or come to a show or
right,
whatever.
Right.
It's like awesome. And I am so grateful for that. And yet like I've started to view that more and more as almost a distraction. And like, because in the last year, since that has become a little more frequent just in town, not like it's national or anything.
Right. Right.
It's yeah. become more and more frequent. I've noticed that I've had a harder and harder time focusing on my the isolation that I thrive within, and I sort of like yearn for that. Like, and I'm at the point now where, like, I just want to sit in my apartment and not see anyone and not go to anything or show or anything and just try to write something, because it's that stuff is, you know, that stuff is what it takes to make this sustainable, and I would never want to ignore the people that are supporting me, but it can be very distracting. So it's almost this thing where you recognize it and are grateful for it, and then if you can somehow immediately put it out of your mind and like, but it doesn't matter. Like,
right, right.
If they hate me, if they love me, like, I just need to write some songs.
Well, that's,
you know?
That's kind of, it's interesting that you say that too. Cause it's like, that's the dichotomy of making good art.
Right.
Right. Is when, you know, like who's it? Pick any artist, you know? And mm-hmm. when they're finally like happy and they're somewhere that they really want to be, their art gets shitty.
Right.
Right.
The struggle doesn't exist.
Yeah. The struggle doesn't. Yeah, exactly. That's a perfect way to put it. And so is that what you view that as? Is that kind of what you see happening or?
No, there's plenty of struggle. but you know, it's just the industry and whenever, like, you know, the snowball starts to build momentum and you just
feel
like there's a lot more to think about now, and I'm thinking about the actual song.
So you're spending more time on just like, you're like, okay, well, what are we going to do for this tour?
Yeah,
you're
maintaining like, momentum.
Right,
and,
right.
You know.
You're not focusing on the music.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I am yearning to, and yet I find it evasive at times.
Well, now you got that guy, Jeff.
Yep.
He's helping you out.
He's great.
Manager kind of publicity
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Yeah, that's
that can
sort of the
take
next
some of that
step
stuff away
like,
from you guys. That's what that's the whole point of that.
Yeah, and it will be welcome when I am independent right now. But I don't necessarily overly romanticize that idea. Like, I'd love
right,
to get
right.
some help with all this logistic stuff,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So that's a little, you know, hint, if anyone is.
anybody looking for a job?
Yeah.
You want to look?
I can
you
pay
work
you
for a
in
band?
Cheetos and Paps.
Oh, I would work for that. As long as they're jalapeno Cheetos. Have you had those, by the way?
Yeah, I'd put them on my bagels when I was in
jalapeno school. Cheetos?
Yeah.
Oh,
just
the best.
A plain bagel, jalapeno Cheetos, and cream cheese.
Oh.
Try it.
Dude. Done.
Okay.
Done. We're going out to get some of those right now. Well, Brian, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. This has been a real pleasure. And you know, I'm totally serious when I say I'm a huge fan.
Thank you.
And I haven't seen you live yet, but you're one of the shows that I want to make it out to. So if you can ever just put me on the list.
Yeah, let me know when you're coming.
Yeah. Done.
Yeah.
Done. I'm going to let you know right after.
I'm not
right
going to tell you which list you're going to be on.
Ah, yeah. Yeah. Hey. You'd be like the shit list. You're on the black list. But yeah, thank you so much for coming by and joining me for episode 100 of the Air Raid podcast. Where can we find your stuff? Let's pimp your wares here.
Yeah, I mean, Brian John Appleby Bandcamp is one. You can Google.
Buy the CD there.
Yeah, yeah, we can send it to you. And yeah, any of the record stores in town, in Seattle, have it. And then, yeah, you can order it online on the website or on Bandcamp.
Okay, and yeah. Just search Brian John Appleby on Facebook, Twitter.
Yeah.
You guys got a tweet?
Mm-hmm. Both of those things.
Thing? Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay, well, thank you so much, man. And yeah. Also, you can find us at air-raid.net, also on mynorthwest.com and the all-new cairoradio.com. So go and check that out. And I'm sure that you can probably find Brian John Appleby on iTunes, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. He's shaking his head yes, or nodding his head yes. So go and, because this kind of stuff really does help out in the long run, go and rate and review Brian John Appleby's music. You've heard three songs of it. Well, you will hear three songs of his today in this episode. So go and rate it. Just go and rate it. It helps out, and it helps us out as well at the Air Raid Podcast if you rate and review our show to continue to get guests like Brian on this podcast. So please go and do that. Thank you so much for joining us for episode 100. It has been a long and arduous journey, and we're not done yet. We're going to keep on going until episode maybe 105, and then we'll just call it quits maybe. But no, thank you guys so much. Your support and all the love that you send us has been awesome. And it's just been great. It's been a really fun ride, and we're going to keep going from here. So, you know, sometime in the future when Brian comes out with his new album, we're going to have you back.
Sounds great.
You want to come back on?
I think
we'll have nothing to talk about because we already talked about religion and all that stuff. There's going to be nothing. It's just going to be a blank slate.
Just crickets.
Yeah. We've got that sound drop too. We can do that. We can do that. All right. What should we go out with this week?
How about Backseat?
All right. This is Backseat by Brian John Appleby. And we'll be back next week with comedian Moshe Kasher. I know I said that was coming up this week, but you know what? We got to do a special episode for episode 100. All right, everybody, have a great one. We'll see you next week.
You were hiding in the backseat of my Lincoln, underneath the blanket with your head against the door. And I was already halfway through Ohio when I heard your soft voice singing to a song on the radio. Mm-hmm. I crept out in the darkness of the morning, past our sleeping father, a cold cigar lying at his feet. He was surrounded by his books down in the parlor, filled with all the words that he had wanted us to read. And this is not an old American story about the rugged man who came out from the east. And I am not some outlaw from the Badlands or a gambler running tables in New Orleans. And so I put you on some money in your shoe for a meal, and I turn my